कुंजा बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जनवाला गिरिवरदारी, जय गोपी जनवाला गिरिवरदारी। यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, जमुना तीरावन चारी, जमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 5, entitled Vidura's Talks with Maitreya, Text 7. Kridan vidate dvijago suranam, chemaya karman avatara bedai, manota tripta apishin vatam naha, sushloka maulas charitam ritani, kridan vidate dvijago suranam, chemaya karmanavatara bedai, mano na tripta api shimbatam naha, sushloka maules charitam ritani. Kridan vidate dvijago suranam, chemaya karmanavatara vedai, mano na tripta tyapi shimvatam naha, Sushloka Maules Charitamritani. Done.
Manifesting pastimes.
Vidate.
He performs.
Dvija.
Twice born.
Go.
Cows.
Sudanam.
Of the demigods.
Chimaya.
Welfare.
Karmani.
Transcendental activities.
Avatara.
Incarnations.
Vedai.
Differently.
Manaha.
Mind.
Na.
Never.
Tripyati.
Satisfies.
Api.
In spite of.
Shrimvatam.
Continuously hearing.
Naha.
Ar.
Sushloka.
Auspicious.
Maule.
Of the Lord.
Charita.
Characteristics.
Amritani.
Undying.
A
translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. You may narrate also about the auspicious characteristics of the Lord in His different incarnations for the welfare of the twice-born, the cows, and the demigods. Our minds are never satisfied completely, although we continuously hear of His transcendental activities. Purport. The Lord appears in this universe in different incarnations, like Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, and Nrsimha. And he manifests his different transcendental activities for the welfare of the twice-born, the cows, and the demigods. The Lord is directly concerned with the twice-born, or civilized men. A civilized man is one who has taken his birth twice. A living entity takes birth in this mundane world due to the union of male and female. A human being is born due to union of the father and mother, but a civilized human being has another birth by contact with a spiritual master who becomes the actual father. The father and mother of the material body are so only in one birth, and in the next birth, the father and mother may be a different couple. But the bona fide spiritual master, as the representative of the Lord, is the eternal father, because the spiritual master has the responsibility to lead the disciple to spiritual salvation, or the ultimate goal of life. Therefore, a civilized man must be twice born, otherwise he is no more than the lower animals. The cow is the most important animal for developing the human body to perfection. The body can be maintained by any kind of foodstuff, but cow's milk is particularly essential for developing the finer tissues of the human brain so that one can understand the intricacies of transcendental knowledge. A civilized man is expected to live on foodstuffs comprising fruits, vegetables, grains, sugar, and milk. The bull helps in the agricultural process of producing grain, etc. And thus, in one sense, the bull is the father of humankind, whereas the cow is the mother, for she supplies milk to human society. A civilized man is therefore expected to give all protection to the bulls and cows. The demigods are the living entities who live in the higher planets are far superior to human beings. Since they have better arrangements for living conditions, they live far more luxuriously than human beings. Yet they are all devotees of the Lord. The Lord incarnates in different forms, such as those of a fish, a tortoise, a hog, and a combined lion and man, just to give protection to civilized man, the cow, and the demigods, who are directly responsible for the relative life of progressive self-realization. The whole system of the material creation is planned so that the conditioned souls may have the opportunity for self-realization. One who takes advantage of such an arrangement is called a demigod or a civilized man. The cow is meant to help maintain such a high standard of living. The Lord's pastimes for the protection of the twice-born civilized men, the cows and the demigods, are all transcendental. A human being is inclined to hear good narrations and stories, and therefore there are so many books, magazines, and newspapers on the market to satisfy the interests of the developed soul. But the pleasure in such literature, after it is read once, becomes stale, and people do not take any interest in reading such literature repeatedly. In fact, newspapers are read for less than an hour and then thrown in the dustbins as rubbish. The case is similar with all other mundane literatures. But the beauty of transcendental literatures like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is that they never become old. They've been read in the world by civilized man for the last 5,000 years, and they have never become old. They are ever fresh to the learned scholars and devotees, and even by daily repetition of the verses of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no satiation for devotees like Vidura. Vidura might have heard the pastimes of the Lord many, many times before he met Maitreya, but still he wanted the same narrations to be repeated because he was never satiated by hearing them. That is the transcendental nature of the Lord's glorious pastimes. Om Ajnanti Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadam Tikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitam Cha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees. May our words be aligned with Guru Parampara. May Radha Shyam Sundar be pleased with this effort to hear Srimad Bhagavatam together. And may all the devotees also be benefited by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So again, we're reading third canto, chapter 5, entitled Vidura's Talks with Maitreya, text 7. This is the verse again. So Vidura is speaking to Maitreya. You may narrate also about the auspicious characteristics of the Lord in his different incarnations for the welfare of the twice-born, the cows, and the demigods. Our minds are never satisfied completely, although we continuously hear of his transcendental activities. So we're on pilgrimage with Vidura. He's going to so many different places. And the essence of pilgrimage is to meet with saintly personalities, with pure devotees. That's the whole point of going on pilgrimage. Of course, there are many holy places that have great power and temples that we can visit. But the key factor is to be with someone who can actually reveal those things to us. To reveal what we're seeing, to reveal the mood we should be in. And so Vidura, he's going to all these places and he's also meeting with great devotees and hearing from them. Because by doing that, we deepen our love for God. So pilgrimage is very important in this way, that we meet with very advanced souls and we hear, we serve them, we hear from them. We have questions. So Vidura, he goes to the bank of the Sarasvati River. As Bhagavatam describes, he goes to 11 holy places there. And then he goes to the bank of the Jamuna, where he meets with Uddhava. And he asks questions to Uddhava. And now he's on the bank of the Ganges, and he's speaking to Maitreya Rishi. In the first verse of this chapter, relationship between Vidura and Maitreya. It's very nice to analyze that first verse because it gives us the necessary conditions for the transmission of transcendental knowledge, because it describes the qualities of Maitreya and the qualities of Vidura, the one who's giving the message and one who's hearing. And if the conditions are right for both the hearer and the receiver, then transcendental knowledge takes place. If one is lacking, it doesn't take place. Unless, of course, if the hearer is very, very advanced, sometimes whatever is said, they can understand the essence of the Krishna conscious perspective and so forth. But in general, for most of us, the idea is that the guru, the speaker, must have certain conditions internally. They must be actually linked to a bona fide parampara, for example. they must also be in the mood of service. I'm giving, not as a, as some kind of master, but I'm a servant. I'm giving as a servant. And then the one who receives, it says here, Vidura, and if you look back at the first verse, very nice description of Vidura. What are his qualities in order to receive properly? Saushilya, that he has, Prabhupada translates Saushilya as he has perfect gentleness. Guna api tripta, and he has all good qualities in his heart. In Maitreya, how is he described? It shows how, first of all, Maitreya, we know he received directly the favor of Krishna. He heard directly from Krishna. And what was the result? It says, agada bodham, that he was able, was very competent to speak because he had unfathomable knowledge. Agada bodham. Unfathomable knowledge. You know, in this world, everything is fathomable. We can measure things and understand things and analyze things. When one is connected to the spiritual energy, then one has access to unfathomable, unlimited knowledge. So he was very competent to speak, and Vidura was very competent to hear, and therefore everything is accomplished in that union. We hear there's guru, there's sat guru. Sat means true, real, the true real guru. But there's also sat shishya, which means the true real disciple. And they're both in the mood of service. So if the person who's giving is in the mood of service, and the person who's receiving is also service. Just by hearing attentively, we're serving. So if both are in that mood of service, then they become, the Lord's divine energy can flow from one to the other. The person who's giving doesn't think this is my knowledge. They're open to receiving the knowledge, the energy, knowledge energy, chit shakti of the Lord comes through them and into another person who's open and receptive. So this is called parampara. This one after the other, but both have to be qualified. For this to continue. Otherwise, the parampara becomes, I believe it's Madhvacharya in some place talks about there's the guru parampara, but there's also the anda parampara. Anda means blind. So there's a parampara that's living, that's alive, when the conditions are right for the speaker and the hearers. And then there's a parampara that it may continue, something may continue, a passing of knowledge. But it has no power. You know, we see in religions, all the religions of the world, traditions continue, but they've many of those acts and the different rituals have lost their power. There's no shakti in it, because the shakti is brought by the personalities who do it, who perform it. You know, like, you know, for example, baptism, you know, a lot of Christians and Catholics and very much into this idea of baptism. So it's a particular act that's performed, you know. I was with a lady who was passing away, and right before she passed away, she was 94 years old, and she was in a assisted living facility in Gainesville. And she suddenly just, you know, her family wanted her to be baptized before she passed away. And she said, well, I was already baptized when I was a child. But they said, no, you should do it again. But she wasn't so interested. But one day I went to see her and she said, I want to get baptized. And so I contacted a church that was close by, and they actually went to the facility, picked her up, took her to the church, and there was a full body immersion. 94-year-old lady. And they took her out and they brought her back to the facility, and I think it was like 6 or 7 hours later she passed away. So of course, we know these acts are important and they have power. There's something to be said about just respecting the act. But really, all these different rituals, you know, we may be offering arti. There's power, of course, in that. But the real essence is the personality, the spirit in which we do it. actually everybody is benefited by if a person is offering arati in the right spirit with true devotion, with love, everybody in the vicinity is benefited. This is the important ingredient. Otherwise, all these things can continue. Just imagine generations and generations pass, and the arati is still the arati and the deity, but there's no heart anymore. It's not living internally within a person. Then these things just become external activities. Sometimes they have these mass baptisms someplace in the south where everyone comes and they just dunk everybody into a river and, you know, it's like... But there's great symbolism in that act. You know, if you go back to the Bible and you see John the Baptist, you know, it's starting from him. He was baptizing people in the River Jordan. But his message, he was giving a message that just this life that you've been living, you have to repent of it. You have to let it go and just open yourself to God's mercy. And the baptism represented, this act represents that. That has to be happening within a person. Otherwise, if we just disconnected from God, we have no repentance, we have no heart of devotion, and we just go and just get some water on our head or get dunked into some... What is that? You know, it should be a transforming. So this is relevant to this verse also, because Prabhupada speaks about the twice born. Twice born. These are also things that we do in our tradition. To be, the Christians say, being born again. We say twice born. Dvija. Dvija. Krishna appears, it says here, in his different incarnations for the welfare of three things here that are mentioned. He comes for the welfare of the cows. He comes for the welfare of the demigods, and he comes for the welfare of the dvijas, the twice born ones. Interesting that Krishna comes, his Leela avatars, he comes for the benefit of the cows. Why? Prabhupada explains nicely. We have a physical body too, we have a physical reality also. And the cow is assisting us in self-realization. Because providing milk, and when we take that milk in, it's described here that this is developing our finer brain tissues for the purpose of receiving transcendental knowledge. So we may not think of it that way, that the animals and all these things are assisting us. We just think they're assisting us materially. But everything in the creation is meant to assist us spiritually. And especially the cows are recognized. So the cows, the demigods also are mentioned here. They're also meant to assist us in our spiritual development. They're great personalities. They are in charge of things of this material creation. A lot of times people will go on pilgrimage, especially in India, go on pilgrimage and then worship the demigods in different places. Because they just have desires and they want them fulfilled and they go to the right source for it. But the demigods are not just meant to be like that. They're just giving you what you want and karmic dealing, but they're also connected to the Lord. So if one has the right consciousness in approaching a demigod with respect, and even you may ask for something from a demigod, but you may also have the prayer, but you are closer to Krishna than I am. So please, I have this desire, but don't allow this to distract me from my devotional service, or maybe if it comes, you still give me from there, I can actually serve better, whatever. But these kind of approach the demigod, and they actually want to help you in that way. They will help you in that way. They're also, it's described here in this purport that the demigods and everything in creation are meant to assist us in our spiritual realization. And especially, Krishna comes for the benefit of the cows, the demigods, but especially the dvija, the twice-born ones. He comes, the devotees. The devotees are twice-born. He comes for their pleasure. It's described here, we are born. How are we born materially in this material world? From a mother and a father. But one has to take another birth. The mother in this second birth is considered to be the Vedas. First of all, Gayatri. Gayatri is mother. And manifestation of the Gayatri is the Vedas. So Veda is also mother. And the father is the spiritual master. So one has to take birth again from this connection with Mother Veda. Mother Veda, I saw Mother Veda this morning. Where is she? She's my neighbor. Mother Veda, and also Father, the spiritual master. Dvija is also the word for the birds, for bird in Sanskrit, because they're also twice born. A bird is, first of all, comes out from an egg, is within the egg, and then again has to come out from the egg, so born twice. So the word for a bird in Sanskrit is dvija, and we also have to become dvija. So Vidura's questions to Maitreya, he's very advanced, Vidura, but he still asks somewhat simple questions. And Prabhupada describes he's asking those questions for us, the common man. And his first question that he asks is very nice and very relevant for us. He says that everyone is doing all the different activities in this world for the purpose of happiness. This is the second verse of this chapter. But instead, they're getting the opposite of happiness. So, what is yuktam? What is the right course then? Everyone's acting for happiness, but getting the opposite result. So what is the right course to actually get happiness? That's his question. This material world is the law of duality, so whatever you pursue, eventually it turns into its opposite. This is an important law of material nature that if we truly understand, we'll become detached in the right way. But if we're still expecting, well, if I just pursue this nice thing, this good thing, I'll get it and I'll be happy, I'll be satisfied. But with time, actually, it will turn into its opposite. Because that is the nature of the law of duality. It's like a circle. Everything is cyclical. So say there's happiness on top, distress on the bottom. So you cut that circle in half. Happiness, distress. So you're going around in the circle. You're moving towards happiness, 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 happiness. And then it will be gone. And then you're in an area of distress. And you think, I have to push harder back to happiness, happiness, happiness. You're back. And then again, you're circling. All the dualities are like that. So, it's not there. That circle is also going on its own, so you don't have to really do anything. The happiness and distress is already destined to you. You can kind of let go a little bit and be what it is and just let me accept what comes to me, accepting it as my karma. That's already fixed, Bhagavatam says. So a little bit we withdraw from that and then we focus on what is transcendental happiness, absolute happiness that has no opposite. Everything here, nature of duality, you want this one thing but it has an opposite. We talk about love, but love can very quickly turn to hate because it's not true love. We talk about goodness, but goodness very soon can turn into badness. We want peace in the world, right? We fight for peace. And then what does that do? It causes war. The strive for peace causes war. Because it's on the material level and the duality has to come. The circle has to go around. You know? If everyone was to decide to just to be, like we all have this idea that everybody just should be peaceful and get along. If everybody in the world was to decide to do that today, then somehow that would invoke in certain personalities a desire for violence. Because that's how, you know, and then if everyone becomes violent, that will invoke in some people a desire for peace. Oh, this violence is creating so much, let's be peaceful again. And this is what the world is doing, going back and forth again and again and again. Round and round in this circle. Samsara. This is the samsara. Samsara is this material world. Everything is going round in circles. But there is an exit. There is a way out. And Vidura also reveals that way out. He, before this verse, he also speaks of the great souls who come into this world. It's a very nice verse. I think it's text 3. Vidura is so enlightened that in all of his questions and everything he says, he's supposed to be the one asking questions, but everything he asks and everything he says is also filled with so much enlightened knowledge. So this great verse, text 3, he says, Janasya Krishna Vimukasya Daivat Adharma Shilasya Sudhu Hitasya Anugrahaye Charanti Nunam Bhutani Bhavyani Janardanasya. So he's speaking, Vidura is speaking to Maitreya. O my Lord, great philanthropic souls travel on the earth on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to show compassion to the fallen souls who are averse to the sense of subordination to the Lord. The living beings here are averse to the Lord. And so great personalities come on behalf of the Lord. It says charanti. It means they're wandering. And also charanti is in the present tense. So it means they're always wandering. So this is not something he's saying, you know, a long time ago great souls came and they were helping. Charanti, they're always there. They're always there, anugrahaya, with great mercy in their hearts to deliver those who are averse to the Lord. So, living being, deep in our hearts, we're averse to Krishna. That has to be seen and realized. And then from there, we can begin to call out to the Lord for His mercy, for His grace. But first we have to realize that internally we are averse to the Lord. Everything, this material world is very harsh. You know, I was hearing the other day, you know, the Bhagavad Gita says that if you're not in the spirit of yajna, the spirit of sacrifice to the Lord, then everything you do creates karma. Everything you eat, whether it's vegetarian or not vegetarian, if it's not in the mood of yajna, the spirit of yajna, then the Bhagavad Gita says you're eating only sin. And everything you think is only sin. Everything you feel is only sin. Everything you do is only sin. So long we are just the basis for our action, for our thinking, for our feeling is the false ego. Because very deep inside we are actually averse to Krishna. So we're doing in a self-centered way and it's creating karmic reaction. That's what we mean by sin. I was hearing that even our breath, every breath, you know, when we breathe out, when you exhale, you're breathing out carbon dioxide. So if that was unchecked, if we just kept putting out more and more carbon dioxide, then actually we would suffocate. We would all die from our breath. The breath is violent even. But because it's absorbed by the vegetable kingdom, it's absorbed by trees. The trees take in the carbon dioxide and they give back oxygen. And then we need that oxygen. So this is, they're like checking us from killing ourselves. Just your own breath will kill you. Just think of this material world. It's a harsh place, you know. And then other kingdoms as well. The animal kingdom, the vegetable kingdom, even the minerals and the microbes and the insects. A lot of them are taking in our deadly radiations. And they kind of assimilate it. And so every kingdom is helping every other kingdom out survive. But actually everyone is also sending forth things that kill. And so if you really see, I mention all this just because if you really see the situation of this material world, you see that this is not the true place where we're meant to be. Everything is karmic reaction. Whatever we eat, whatever we think, whatever we feel, whatever we do. So therefore, we're completely trapped. And just you know, the Bhagavatam speaks about the creation. And we think, oh, that's how it all started. But we forget that before that creation was a dissolution of the universe. And before that was another creation, before that was another dissolution. So we've been here, and things have been going on like this for so long. But fortunately, great souls have come from the transcendental platform, from the spiritual level, the true home, true level of life, of existence, where love has no opposite, where goodness has no opposite, no duality. There's variety, but no duality. So those souls come, and they give us a message. If we receive that message, like it's mentioned here, with perfect gentleness, with a heart full of good qualities. It says Vidura is also Achyuta Bhava. He has the bhava, he has the mood of Achyuta himself. He's compatible with God, his consciousness. So when those qualities are there and we receive the message, we serve those great souls. We hear, we serve, we follow that example. And then we'll see that what happens is then we're opening ourselves up now to another energy that can come into us. And when that energy comes into us, it transforms everything. Even the material body gets transformed. That's why we consider the body of a pure devotee also as sacred. So we say it is also spiritual. A little inconceivable for us to understand how that's so. But the idea is that when we finally are able to receive two forces, positive force and a negative force, a guru and disciple. The guru is the positive force giving something. Disciple is the negative force, negative in a sense of receiving. And then something takes place. Just like we have this also in a man and a woman can produce a child. Again, the positive and the negative. The man positive is giving forth the seed received by the woman. A child is produced. So this is just a law, material and spiritual. So we are in the mood, we are all feminine on the spiritual level, and the Lord is the supreme masculine. He's the one who can give something. But we have to learn what it means to be receptive. So even though we're very active in service, it seems very active, but in a sense, the service should be making us receptive to the divine energy of the Lord. Not that I'm doing this. My service, my action, my ability, my strength, my intelligence. That's a positive. Two positives, nothing happens. The Lord is the positive. So even though we're doing things and acting, and when we're chanting, we think, I'm chanting. But again, the chanting is like a calling out. It's the chataka bird. You know, the example of the chataka bird. The chataka bird is just waiting, sitting on a branch. The chataka bird will only take water from the cloud. So there's water everywhere in the earth, but the chataka bird ignores that water, doesn't go after it. The chataka has taken a vow, I will only get water from the cloud. Now, you can't control that. Chataka can't control that, but what can chataka do? It can go on the branch and open its mouth and just wait. That is chanting. You know, we're speaking, it seems very active, I'm doing something. But really, unless Krishna appears on our tongue, unless Krishna descends, but the chataka is very eager, so open mouth, the mouth is open, and nothing may come, but open mouth, eager, waiting. And if nothing comes, chataka also doesn't complain. Okay, it goes away, flies around. Okay, the clouds now are assembling again, maybe some drop is going to come. Chataka goes back, sees this dark cloud come. Maybe it's the time I'm going to get this one drop of water back on the tree branch, open mouth, waiting, nothing. Again and again and again and again. This is the chataka bird is the devotee. Just again, we go on service, we do so many things, hearing, chanting, but dependent on the grace of the Lord to come through all those mediums, to come through the medium of Bhagavatam, to come through the medium of the holy name, to come through the medium of the spiritual master. But if we're not longing, if we're not eager, if we're not open mouth, expectant, confident in the Lord, but at the same time patient, completely patient, if we don't have that mood, then the energy cannot pass into us, the divine energy, and that's what transforms us ultimately. So we'll stop here for some thoughts, comments, questions. Anyone? Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
A very nice realization. Sometimes, like, we don't get so much opportunity to defend the power, to protect the power. But, I know whenever something is mentioned by the power, we should use that opportunity to help protect them. Like, we can see this Kali.
Protect what? I couldn't hear you.
Cows.
Cows. Oh, okay.
We can see millions of cows are being slaughtered daily. Mercilessly.
Yeah.
And it becomes a norm in the world. And it's only the devotees can see the great sinfulness that is taking place. You know, and it's only the devotees can bring this awareness, you know. So what can we do more to help in this area? I mean, and this is one of the areas causing so much misery in the world.
Yes. Yeah, it's amazing when you think of Srila Prabhupada. He so much emphasized this, huh? It was like Prabhupada was really brokenhearted that the cows were being mistreated. You know, he would speak with different people, and you know, he'd speak with somebody from this tradition, that tradition, and he'd always bring up the cows. It's just this one animal. He said, even if you want to eat other animals, you can do that. But this cow, the cow is of course we know, is one of the mothers. There are seven mothers. And cow is providing milk, which is actually, the milk has a spiritual purpose. That's what we're learning from this purport today. It's not just you have a nice healthy body and, you know, but it's actually intentionally the cow is there to exchange with human society, which many animals aren't necessarily meant to exchange with human society. We hear about the bulls, they do, as they're also used in a way they have an interaction with us, with the plowing the fields and the grains, and the cows also giving milk, just like a mother gives milk. So very important amongst the animals to offer protection. And so we can imagine that we will get that milk in very aggressive ways, and then after, and harm the cow during the whole process, and then afterwards kill the cow, eat the cow. So obviously this is creating very terrible karmic reactions. So what can we do? I mean, this is what we're doing, right? Is that we're bringing to awareness. We can speak to people. It's very hard for people to understand this point when we emphasize this one animal. This is like a devotee thing, you know? Krishna loves his cows. It's like, how do you logically, you know, explain that to somebody, that God actually, amongst the animals, he favors, there's an exchange he has with the cows. This is something for us that we know, hard to communicate to others. If we say, eat anything else but the cow. Why are you giving so much emphasis to the cow? But, you know, we see, you know, just by our example of our own cow protection, doing cow protection, taking care of the cows, you know, something, some seva like this that we're doing, I think this is the only way. Be the example, speak about it, bring the awareness out. Yeah, as we're doing.
Yes, thank you so much, Guru, for your wonderful class. This point you made of, the doer, we can have, if we're not receptive in performing the action, service even, we won't get the divine energy We have to be receptive and not think we're the doer and be proud of what we've done, even. And your point about, there was another point I appreciated. Except that I questioned, did you say that a person, in describing the dualities of material nature, a person who is peaceful will evoke violence from others?
Yes. Because the dualities, they beget one another.
They beget the opposite.
Yes.
Even if one is peaceful in the mode of goodness, wouldn't it emit?
Well, that we see that that will aggravate certain people. You know, somebody's very peaceful and somebody is somehow in their consciousness is in a different place. They'll actually want to attack such a person, maybe. Or they'll want to show the opposite. You see, we have this rebelliousness against anything that's good. So we create something in this world, and you know, like there's so many examples, but people are trying to have some Zoom call in some very positive form or something, and then somebody breaks into it and just speaks all kinds of vulgar things, and you know, it's somehow it's invoking the opposite. Okay. You know, and also, you know, like then if, and we know the opposite is also true, right? If we see a lot of violence, and then certain people will say, we have to stop this. But they both work that way. See, it's hard for us to see how the good leads to the bad. We only see the bad can lead to good because finally you realize you have to make a change. But it goes both ways. That's the duality. They're both equal. Yeah. It's like one stick with two ends, good, bad. But it's one stick, actually. They're both bad because they're both disconnected from... They're both in the material world, and they're just... The goodness has an appearance of goodness. That's what tricks us, and we go after it, and we strive it. But we're actually evoking the opposite. Until we let go and ask, what is true goodness? What is absolute goodness? And then we withdraw from that back and forth of the duality, and we move towards our consciousness, towards what is absolute. And then we can actually experience what we want to experience without an opposite coming afterwards.
And I really appreciate your point that when we're not offering sacrifice, on all levels, in every action of our life, we're displaying aversion. We're averse to Krishna.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's an important realization, because then we can do everything with more longing, to now return, to not be averse, to connect. Krishna, please, I'm averse, but please, by your grace, by your devotees, allow me now to make that transformation of my heart. It allows us to beg. But if we don't feel we're averse, then we won't beg. Yes.
Thank you for your class. You're also mentioning about transcendental happiness. It doesn't have that duality. So I was trying to understand transcendental happiness. You're also talking about surrendering. You gave the example of submersion, complete. So I was thinking about Yudhishthira Maharaj, how he surrendered to Krishna's will for the war. So it seems like it was a surrender, it was transcendental. And yet we see his result was depression. I'm trying to understand what is, even in our lives when we surrender, and it seems like sometimes there's, you know, it seems like the result is not transcendental happiness. What is transcendental happiness? I guess that's my question to you.
Yeah, you know, especially when it comes to us in this material world, we can be in this, you can actually surrender to the Lord, but then our life, still things, you know, are difficult and bring sadness. You know, we see the suffering of others, as Yudhishthira Maharaj was. You know, still the heart can become heavy with certain sacrifices that we make. And the level of the soul, what's behind that, it's for us at least, it's still kind of maybe not having fully broken away from the material consciousness. And if the depression really becomes like a sticky, confused depression, then that's a sign of material consciousness sinking back into it. But there's a way in which you can just experience an emotion as it comes, some sadness, say the loss of a loved one, and you feel the sadness and then it goes. And you're still, you always remain situated in that peace of that connection to God, right? So there's a way in which, so we talk about Yudhisthira's depression, but you really have to like look into what it is, and it's hard to do, and to know what's in his heart. And definitely it was the sadness of the suffering of others, of so much death, of feeling responsible himself for it. But those things could be mixed with different conceptions, for us especially, misconceptions. You know, like to say I was responsible for it is also to somehow miss a little bit the plan of the Lord. But ultimately when that surrender is there, whatever is coming to us, we may face it and experience different things in this life, a moment of some sadness, but everything is, the background of all of it is this connection, this peace, this loving connection to the Lord. And so one can actually overcome anything and withstand anything from that connection. So that's one level of it. And of course, the transcendental happiness, you're in the spiritual world, all the different emotions, there's still anger, there's still all these things, but they're all love. They're all flavors of love. So, but it's a little different with there and here. So because we're a material world, material consciousness, we're kind of like a little bit back and forth. We surrender, but then I still have certain ways that I see the world that are habits coming back, and maybe that's causing some of the suffering that continues on. But Krishna ultimately is not seeing what we feel. He's not giving so much importance to, oh, you may feel like this or feel like that, but if you're actually surrendered and you're in the mood of service and you're sacrificing for Krishna, he is accepting all that. And after we do our time in this material world, then we return to him in perfect happiness.
So on our level, we can see that transcendental happiness as our connection with the Lord is, when we're surrendering, we have the connection, and the waves may be going up and down on the surface, but that connection, feeling that connection, is in our stage, the transcendental happiness.
Yeah, I would say there's different stages like that. You know, if you're actually connected to God, you may still experience so many things of this world, but that deep connection and peace is a form of happiness. And then there's other kinds of happiness that, you know. Does that sound okay, Prabhu? Does that sound right? Yes.
I think Yudhisthira Maharaj had a higher, Krishna had a higher purpose in this episode.
Yeah.
I'm glad Sri Bhakti Siddhanta would give a comment that when a materialistic person are depressed, suicidal, they don't see that they are going to suffer more after they leave this world. They become ghosts and their suffering never ends. But Madhavendra Puri looks like a same depressed of suicidal. But then so-called Brahmananda came by his disciple, Ramachandra, and then he rejected her. So he's happy. That was not a measurable by material estimation. Then he dove into such a deep crying, Oi Dina Dayardhananda He Maturanatha, and he was crying and crying and crying. He wants that. Later on when he came out of it, but he wants that feeling because the closeness to Lord becomes so intense. It is a million times more happiness than any happiness experience. Also in Yudhisthira Maharaj's case, we can say that did they suffer due to the karma? Say no. They are devotees, they don't do karma. Did they suffer due to the dharma? Say no, he is a dharma personified. Yudhisthira. How can he, you know, there is no adharma. So then what is the cause? They went by and the time, maybe time causes somebody happy or suffer. You know. So no, time has no influence to the eternal essence. So what is the cause? That Krishna wants to establish that he relish a reciprocation to be a messenger, a chariot to spend his time with the associate, how he gives himself,
This has to be established for future generation, that this is what ultimate happiness is. And because Yudhishthira Maharaj was not looking in that way, he was looking at maybe Duryodhana is a good logician, good manager, he could have been, you know, nothing wrong with him, but he had no devotion. He never accepted Krishna's supreme authority. Nivedita Atma Vichikishita, those verses emphasize, Krishna himself told, he said, when, just before Bhima actually killed Duryodhana, he asked, fear God, why is always supporting Pandava is known as. So he quoted that verse and he says, not if I am God, I am Supreme Personality of God. Krishna was very bully, like really old. And he said, I own, I am the proprietor of everything. And they are my devotees, Nivedita Atma. They have given up everything for my pleasure. They deserve to rule. You don't. Did Duryodhana surrender now? So, ultimately, of course, he got lost. But Prabhupada made a very nice comment. Even though it looks like Krishna created this atmosphere, he helped Bhima to kill Duryodhana, but he was not happy in his heart. He wanted some way or other Duryodhana to understand and surrender. So rebellious. That's why it appears like they're suffering, but he was not suffering. He created this whole atmosphere just to be merciful to even to the demons. So when we look at from that angle, then we understand, okay, Krishna had a purpose. He wants to establish the reciprocation is more important than anything else. And he did. He was a messenger, he was a charioteer, he was the best friend and everything. So we have to look at it from that angle. Because that's our ultimate goal, to have a relationship with the Lord. Very nice class.
Very nice description. Thank you.
In a few points I was thinking, like, even doing the other things, like, because recently I was making a little notes. The word arati, a is complete with feeling. Rati means that which is in the heart of every soul, as a, in relation to Krishna, as a lover to offer it, and Krishna as a beloved to relish it. So if that is not there, then paraphernalia offering is not actually arati. It is just a, not even roti, just a ritual. Shanskar, you can say. It purifies some extent. But it is not complete puja to Prabhupada if I don't have a feeling for it. That I do. So it's very nice. Thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you for okay. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Srila